All right, it's December 1st, and it's study night, and we're studying Diligently Seeking God. And this evening, in our 12th study session of this topic, we're going to be looking at Jacob. I'd like to start in Hebrews 11, verse 6. This is the verse that we've all been memorizing, and hopefully everyone has memorized it. And it says, "But without faith, it is impossible to please him. For he that cometh to God must believe that he is, and that he is a rewarder of them that diligently seek him." And we've been looking at these examples that this chapter gives about those that did diligently seek him and how God rewarded them. Last week, we looked at Isaac and how it was by faith or by believing that he blessed Jacob and Esau concerning things to come. That's in verse 20. It says, "By faith, Isaac blessed Jacob and Esau concerning things to come." And just as a little recap from last week, if you weren't here, that Isaac intended to bless Esau, his firstborn son, who was born maybe minutes before his brother Jacob. But he was the heir. He was the one that Isaac intended to bless. But Rebekah knew that this was coming, and she commanded Jacob to obey her voice and to pose as Esau so that he would get the blessing from his father Isaac. Now, Jacob protested. He didn't want to do that, but she insisted that he obey. So he obeyed his mother, posed as Esau, and got the blessing. Now, when Isaac realized that it was really Jacob that got blessed instead of Esau, he didn't get angry or upset with Jacob. He told Esau, "Yea, and he shall be blessed," because he knew that the words that he used to bless him came from God. And God knew all along who it was. And God does not fault Jacob for what he did. He does fault Esau for having sold his birthright for one morsel of food. And the blessing went with the birthright. So God saw that transaction and he witnessed it and he honored that transaction. Now, the next thing that it talks about in Hebrews 11 in verse 21, it says, "By faith Jacob, when he was a dying, blessed both the sons of Joseph and worshiped, leaning upon the top of his staff." So we want to look at this. The incident is recorded in Genesis chapter 48, but there's a lot that happened between Isaac blessing Jacob and Esau and Jacob blessing his grandchildren, the children of Joseph. And it would take a long time to read everything through. I suggest that you do. But in the meantime, I'll just tell you the story of what happened. So you can get your hot chocolate and we'll sit around the campfire and I'll tell you the story. Okay? So after Jacob got the blessing that would have otherwise gone to Esau, Esau was really ticked off about this and he threatened to kill Jacob after their father was dead. And Rebekah overheard this and she became alarmed and told Isaac that we need to send Jacob away for his safety. Plus, we want him to marry a girl that's from Rebekah's family, because Esau had married some of the girls from the Canaanite area and they just couldn't stand those girls. So they sent him away. Before they sent him away, Isaac blessed Jacob again, confirming the blessing, knowing full well that it was Jacob, and they sent him away. Now, when he went, he rested in a place called Luz, L-U-Z, and had a dream that night. God appeared to him with a ladder that went up to heaven and the angels ascending and descending upon it. And in this dream, God speaks to Jacob and he blesses him further and tells him that he is getting the blessing of Abraham. And he makes promises to him about the territory that he'll receive and the things that he will do for him. And when Jacob wakes up, he calls the place Bethel, which means house of God. He sets up a stone pillar and pours oil on the top of it, anointing the pillar. and makes a vow to God, saying that if God will indeed take care of me, provide for me, protect me so that I return to my father's house in peace, then God will be my only God, and this place will be a special place. And he vowed to give him tithes, or a tenth of all that God would give to him. So he made this vow to God, and then he continues on his way, and he gets to where Laban, Rebekah's brother, lives, and sees his daughter Rebekah, and he just falls in love with her. She's a beautiful girl, and he tells Laban, I'd like to marry your daughter. Laban says, fine with me. And Jacob says, I don't have anything to give you for a dowry. And he says, don't worry about it. Just work for me for 7 years, and she'll be yours. So Jacob works for him for 7 years. Then they have the wedding in the wedding night. And he wakes up in the morning and finds out that Laban had pulled a switcheroo on him. And instead of Rachel in bed with him, it's Rachel's older sister, Leah, that Jacob is not so crazy about. She's not as good looking as Rachel, and he just doesn't like her all that much. And he says to Laban, what did you do? I worked 7 years for Rachel, and now you give me Leah? And Laban says, well, it's a custom in our area here that the older daughter has to be married before the younger one does. So you've got Leah, and I'll also give you Rachel, but work for me for another 7 years. So Jacob agrees to that. And during that time, he has a number of children. So Leah is the first one that has the baby. And the first one is named Reuben. So Reuben is the firstborn, okay? Reuben is the firstborn. And the next one after that is Simeon, okay? And then after that, Levi, and then Judah, then Issachar, and Zebulun, and a girl that they called Dinah. Now, all along, Rachel is not able to have children, and she's getting a little ticked off about it. She gives Jacob her handmaid, or her female servant, and her name was Bilhah. And Jacob has a child by her, call him Dan, and then another one named Naphtali. And then Leah stops having children, so she gives her servant to Jacob. Her name is Zilpah, and she has Gad and Asher. And then Rachel becomes able to have babies, and she has one named Joseph, and later on she'll have another one named Benjamin. So altogether he will have 12 sons and a daughter. But at the end of the 14 years, Jacob says to Laban, well, I've worked all these years for your two daughters, and now I need to go and provide for my own family. And Laban says, oh, well, won't you stay? Because I can see that God has blessed me since you've been here. Just tell me what your wages will be. And Jacob, who's a shepherd by trade and has been taking care of Laban's flocks, says, here's what we'll do. We'll separate out all the sheep that are spotted and speckled and streaked, and they will be mine, and the other ones that are solid colors will be yours. Laban says, that sounds good to me. And then God shows Jacob a way to make sure that the ones that are born are spotted, speckled, and streaked. And he uses this method for the strong animals and not for the weak animals. So all the strong animals produce more, and they're spotted, speckled, and streaked. So Jacob, his flock grows and grows and grows, and Laban's gets smaller, and Laban's not too happy about it. But Jacob is getting rich. Then God talks to Jacob, and he says, it's time for you to go back to where your parents are, back in the land of Canaan. They're still alive at that point. An additional 6 years has gone by, so he's been away from home for about 20 years. And he's afraid to tell Laban that he's leaving, thinking he might pull a fast one on him. So he just takes his family and his animals, and they leave in the middle of the night, and they head towards Canaan. Laban hears about it, pursues after him, and then reproves them for stealing away with his children and his grandchildren. But they have an agreement. They make a covenant that they won't do each other any harm. They have a big farewell dinner, and they part their ways. Now, shortly after this, Jacob hears that Esau is coming to meet him. And he is really scared to death about facing Esau, and he prays to God for God to protect him. And around that time, there's an angel that Jacob wrestles with, and the angel tells him God is changing your name from Jacob to Israel, which means God prevails. So Israel, Jacob, meets his brother. He sends him these gifts of animals in different waves, and he sends servants who will always refer to Esau as Jacob's lord and refers to Jacob as Esau's servant to appease the wrath that his brother might have. But Esau shows up with 400 men on horseback. It's like a small army. Jacob does a lot of bowing down to him, and he does appease his brother's wrath. He greets him warmly and says, "What's all this?" He says, "Oh, this is a gift. No, God's blessed me so much, I want to share it with you." So they part ways on friendly terms. And then Jacob goes to a place called Succoth, and he makes a house, and he stays there a little while. And then another place called Shalem. And at Shalem, there's a young man named Shechem. And Shechem sees Dinah, Jacob's daughter, and he's smitten with her. And he takes her, and it says he defiles her. And Dinah's brothers get really angry about this. But Shechem falls in love with Dinah, and he and his dad, who's a wealthy landowner in the area, they go to meet Jacob and ask if Jacob will give Shechem his daughter Dinah to be his wife. And the brothers, they're the ones that speak up, and they say, "Well, we'll do this under one condition. If you get circumcised, and if all the males in your city agree to get circumcised." So they agree to do that. Shechem just loves Dinah so much, he says, "I'll do it." And he talks the other guys into doing it, saying that these people are rich, they have a lot of cattle and sheep, and then we'll intermarry with them, and we'll all get rich off of this thing. So they all get circumcised. And then Simeon and Levi, that's Jacob's second and third born sons, they attack the city when everyone's still in pain and sore from the circumcision. And they kill all the males and they take all their stuff, the wives, the children, the animals, anything of value. They murdered everybody and robbed them, just looted the town. Jacob is very upset with Simeon and Levi for doing this because it disgraces him in the eyes of everybody around them. And he's very concerned that there's going to be retribution from the people of the area about that. Another thing that happens at that time is Jacob finds out that Reuben, his firstborn son, had slept with Bilhah, who was one of Jacob's concubines, one of the ones that he took to have some children with. So Reuben had slept with, it wasn't his own mother, but one of his father's concubines. And Jacob is very angry about this. And this is important information because Reuben would have been the heir. Now, the heir of the family, generally the firstborn, when the father would be ready to die and would divide up his estate, he would divide it among his sons. But the heir, the eldest son, would get a double portion. Also, while he was living, he would have a special coat that he would wear that would designate him as the heir, and he would get that honor from the rest of the family. Because Reuben had done this thing to his father, Jacob decided he will not be the heir. Next in line would have been Simeon and Levi, who had murdered everybody in this city. So that disqualified them as well. So what happens is he makes Joseph the heir, makes him a coat of many colors. Okay, that coat of many colors would have been a long tunic with long sleeves, and it would designate that he was the chosen heir. Even though he wasn't one of the oldest ones, he was the second to the youngest one. He had a little brother named Benjamin. In fact, Rachel died in childbirth while giving birth to Benjamin, which, of course, made Jacob very sad, and he mourned for her. But he still had the 12 sons and his daughter. Now, after this, he does get to visit his parents, goes back to the plains of Mamre, where Isaac and Rebekah still are, and he gets to see Isaac before he dies. Isaac lives to be 180 years old. And then Jacob sends his son Joseph out to see how his brothers are doing, and they just hate Joseph. He's like the second to the youngest, but he's strutting around in this coat of many colors, and he tells them of the dreams that he had. dreams that would indicate that his brothers as well as his parents would bow down to him. And they just couldn't stand that. They take him, they were planning on killing him, but some of the brothers talk the rest of them out of that and say, let's not kill him and have his blood on our hands. Let's sell him as a slave and divide up the money. So they do that, but they convince their father that Jacob had been killed, like attacked by a wild animal. So Jacob is in mourning for a long time over his son, who is his favorite. He said he's the one that he loved the most. But after this, Joseph goes down to Egypt and he works for Potiphar, the Egyptian, for a while, and he gets promoted in his house. And then he gets falsely accused by Potiphar's wife, winds up in prison, and then tells the dreams to the king's butler and baker. And then the king himself, Pharaoh, has a dream, and Joseph interprets that dream for him, and Pharaoh promotes him and makes him second in command of all Egypt. And they have that seven-year famine. During that seven-year famine, Jacob sends his sons down to Egypt to buy food. And Joseph sees them. They don't recognize Joseph on the first trip. They just know he's the big shot there. And he acts a little gruff towards them. And then they come back a second time. And on that second trip down, Joseph reveals himself to them as their brother. And they're a little alarmed at this because they think he might want to get back at them for having sold him as a slave, but he assures them that it's okay. And he sends to have his father and the rest of the family brought down to Egypt. In the meantime, Jacob is still grieving over the loss of his son. When his other sons tell him that Joseph is alive, he doesn't believe them at first, but he sees the wagons that Joseph sends. He makes arrangements to bring the whole family down. And then God talks to Jacob, and God tells him, yes, Joseph is alive. He is in Egypt. Don't be afraid to go down there. I want you to go there at this time. So he does. There's 70 in Jacob's family that go down to Egypt. And he gets to meet Pharaoh. Joseph introduces Jacob and some of his brothers to Pharaoh, and Pharaoh asks Jacob, well, how old are you? And he says, 130 years. And he puts Jacob and Joseph's brothers in charge of his own sheep, and he gives them the best grazing land in Egypt called the land of Goshen, where they can take care of all their flocks and herds, all their livestock. And then we're going to pick this up reading some of this now in chapter 48. Where Jacob is at the end of his life. He lives there another 17 years, so he's 147 years old when he dies, okay? And in verse 1 of chapter 48, it says, and it came to pass after these things that one told Joseph, behold, thy father is sick. And he took with him his two sons, Manasseh and Ephraim. These are the two sons of Joseph. Joseph, I think, will have other sons after this, but at the time he had these two. So he took his two sons to meet his father, his son's grandfather. Verse 2, and one told Jacob and said, behold, thy son Joseph cometh unto thee. And Israel strengthened himself and sat upon the bed. And Jacob said unto Joseph, God Almighty appeared unto me at Luz, that's the place later called Bethel, in the land of Canaan, and blessed me, and said unto me, behold, I will make thee fruitful, and multiply thee, and I will make of thee a multitude of people, and will give this land to thy seed after thee for an everlasting possession. And now thy two sons, Ephraim and Manasseh, which were born unto thee in the land of Egypt before I came unto thee into Egypt, are mine, as Reuben and Simeon, they shall be mine. So he's considering Joseph's two sons as his own sons that will be heirs with the other brothers. So that would give Joseph a double portion, you see, being the designated heir. Each of his sons would get a full portion. That would be the double portion. And thy issue, this is Jacob still talking to Joseph, and thy issue which thou begettest after them shall be thine, and they shall be called after the name of their brethren in their inheritance. And as for me, when I came from Paddan, Rachel died by me in the land of Canaan in the way, when yet there was but a little way to come unto Ephrath, and I buried her there in the way of Ephrath, the same as Bethlehem, which will later on be the city where David lives and where Jesus Christ is born, right? And Israel beheld Joseph's sons and said, who are these? And Joseph said unto his father, they are my sons, whom God hath given me in this place. And he said, bring them, I pray thee, unto me, and I will bless them. Now the eyes of Israel were dim for age, so that he could not see. Probably had cataracts or something like that. So he could still see something, but he couldn't see as clearly as he used to when he was younger. And he brought them near unto him, and he kissed them and embraced them. And Israel said unto Joseph, I had not thought to see thy face, you know, thinking you were dead all those years. And lo, God hath showed me also thy seed. How happy that must have made him to see his son alive, who he thought had been dead for so long, and to see his son's children as well. And Joseph brought them out from between his knees, and he bowed himself with his face to the earth. So if he brought him from between his knees, he probably had his sons crawl on their hands and knees to their father in a position of humility. And then Joseph himself bowed down before his father, showing great respect. And Joseph took them both, Ephraim in his right hand towards Israel's left hand, okay, and Manasseh in his left hand toward Israel's right hand, and brought them near unto him. Why? Because if he's going to bless the two boys, he'd have his right hand on the older one and his left hand on the younger one, right? The right hand being the hand of blessing. So he made sure that Ephraim was at Israel's left hand. Ephraim was the younger one. Manasseh, the older one, at Israel's right hand. And Israel stretched out his right hand and laid it upon Ephraim's head, who was the younger, and his left hand upon Manasseh's head. He crossed his hands like this to do it this way, guiding his hands wittingly, means he knew what he was doing, for Manasseh was the firstborn, but he had his right hand on Ephraim's head, who was the younger one. And he blessed Joseph and said, God before whom my fathers Abraham and Isaac did walk, the God which fed me all my life long unto this day, the angel which redeemed me from all evil, bless the lads, and let my name be named on them, and the name of my fathers Abraham and Isaac, and let them grow into a multitude in the midst of the earth. Beautiful words that came from God. And when Joseph saw that his father laid his right hand upon the head of Ephraim, the younger one, it displeased him. And he held up his father's hand to remove it from Ephraim's head unto Manasseh's head. So we got to straighten dad out here. He doesn't know what he's doing. And Joseph said unto his father, not so, my father, for this Manasseh is the firstborn. Put thy right hand upon his head. And his father refused and said, I know it, my son, I know it. He also shall become a people, and he also shall be great. But truly his younger brother shall be greater than he, and his seed shall become a multitude of nations. And he blessed them that day, saying, in thee shall Israel bless, saying, God make thee as Ephraim and as Manasseh. And he set Ephraim before Manasseh. And we know from Hebrews 11:21 that he did this by faith, by believing. He did it in this way because that's what God told him to do, and he was doing it in obedience to God's will. Because Jacob was one that diligently sought God. He diligently sought, what does God want me to do? And he did it that way, even if Joseph didn't like it. And even though Joseph was the second in command of all Egypt, what God has for him to do, that's the only important thing. That's why he did it that way. And Israel said unto Joseph, behold, I die, but God shall be with you, and bring you again unto the land of your fathers. Moreover, I have given to thee one portion above thy brethren, which I took out of the hand of the Amorite with my sword and with my bow. So you, Joseph, you're the heir. That's why you had that coat of many colors when you were younger, and I've given you a double portion, which the firstborn would be entitled to. So he was treating Joseph as if he were the firstborn, because he had disqualified Reuben and Simeon and Levi. So let's read the next chapter, because this is where Jacob calls all the sons together, and he has words from God for each one of them. So let's read about this. Verse 1, and Jacob called unto his sons and said, gather yourselves together, that I may tell you that which shall befall you in the last days. How would he know this unless God would show him, right? Gather yourselves together and hear, ye sons of Jacob, and hearken unto Israel your father. Reuben, thou art my firstborn, my might, and the beginning of my strength, the excellency of dignity, and the excellency of power. Unstable as water, thou shalt not excel, because thou wentest up to thy father's bed, then defilest thou it. He went up to my couch. So that thing that he'd done so many years ago, Jacob let him know that God knew it, he knew it, it was the wrong thing to do, and there were consequences to be paid. Simeon and Levi are brethren. Instruments of cruelty are in their habitations. O my soul, come not thou into their secret, unto their assembly. Mine honor, be not thou united, for in their anger they slew a man, and in their self-will they dig down a wall. You know, that's just the tip of the iceberg of what they did. They killed everyone in that walled city and took all their stuff. Cursed be their anger, for it was fierce, and their wrath, for it was cruel. I will divide them in Jacob and scatter them in Israel. Judah, thou art he whom thy brethren shall praise. Because that's what Judah means. It means praise. Thy hand shall be in the neck of thine enemies. Thy father's children shall bow down before thee. Now that's interesting. Even though Ephraim would be the biggest tribe, it would be Judah that his father's children, all his brothers, would bow down to. Judah is a lion's whelp. From the prey, my son, thou art gone up. He stooped down, he couched as a lion, and as an old lion, who shall rouse him up? And in the book of Revelation, Jesus Christ is called the Lion of the tribe of Judah, which is interesting. Verse 10, continuing with Judah, says, the scepter shall not depart from Judah, nor a lawgiver from between his feet until Shiloh come. And the word Shiloh means he whose it is. So the scepter will not depart from Judah, nor a lawgiver from between his feet until shall come the one that the scepter belongs to. That would be Jesus Christ. And unto him shall the gathering of the people be, binding his foal unto the vine and his ass's colt unto the choice vine. He washed his garments in wine and his clothes in the blood of grapes. His eyes shall be red with wine and his teeth white with milk. He's had a lot to say about Judah. Zebulun shall dwell at the haven of the sea, and he shall be for an haven of ships, and his border shall be unto Zidon. Issachar is a strong ass couching down between two burdens. And he saw that rest was good, and the land that it was pleasant, and bowed his shoulder to bear, and became a servant unto tribute. So he has a lot of strength, but would rather be resting than working. Dan shall judge his people as one of the tribes of Israel. Dan shall be a serpent by the way, an adder in the path that biteth the horse heels, so that his rider shall fall backward. I have waited for thy salvation, O Lord. Gad, a troop shall overcome him, but he shall overcome at the last. Out of Asher his bread shall be fat, and he shall yield royal dainties. Naphtali is a hind let loose, he giveth goodly words. Joseph is a fruitful bough, even a fruitful bough by a well, whose branches run over the wall. The archers have sorely grieved him, and shot at him, and hated him. But his bow abode in strength, and the arms of his hands were made strong by the hands of the mighty God of Jacob. From thence the mighty God of Jacob is the shepherd, the stone of Israel. even by the God of thy father, who shall help thee, and by the Almighty, who shall bless thee with blessings of heaven above, blessings of the deep that lieth under, blessings of the breast and of the womb. The blessings of thy father have prevailed above the blessing of my progenitors unto the utmost bound of the everlasting hills. They shall be on the head of Joseph, and on the crown of the head of him that was separate from his brethren. Benjamin shall raven as a wolf. In the morning he shall devour the prey, and at night he shall divide the spoil. All these are the 12 tribes of Israel, and this is it that their father spake unto them, and blessed them, every one according to his blessing, he blessed them. And he charged them, and said unto them, I am to be gathered unto my people. Bury me with my fathers in the cave that is in the field of Ephron the Hittite, in the cave that is in the field of Machpelah, which is before Mamre in the land of Canaan, which Abraham bought with the field of Ephron the Hittite for a possession of a burying place. Abraham originally bought that to bury Sarah in, then he was buried there himself. And there they buried Abraham and Sarah his wife, there they buried Isaac and Rebekah his wife, and there I buried Leah. So he wanted to be buried in the same place. The purchase of the field and of the cave that is therein was from the children of Heth. And when Jacob had made an end of commanding his sons, he gathered up his feet into the bed and yielded up the ghost and was gathered unto his people. So that ends the life of Jacob, but his descendants, they're the ones that became like the stars of heaven and the sand which is by the seashore in multitude. And God loved Jacob, and he blessed him and his family, and through him and through Judah, one of his sons came, Jesus Christ. So an important man to us as well as to everyone else. Very important to us because Jesus Christ came through there. But we can certainly learn a lot from the things that he did and how he believed God and how he obeyed God. And it's the kind of man that he was. Now, I just think it's interesting that in so many of the things that we've read about these individuals mentioned in Hebrews 11 so far, that it was generally not the firstborn or the self-willed ones that prevailed. You know, Abraham, he may have been the firstborn of his father, Terah. Terah was the father of Abraham in Genesis 11:26. It says, Terah lived 70 years and begat Abram and Nahor and Haran. Okay, so Abram looks like he was the oldest one of that family. But among Abram's sons, or Abraham, first he had Ishmael, right, through Hagar, and then he had Isaac. But Ishmael was the one that was cast out and rejected as far as being the promised one. God still blessed him. God told Abraham and he told Hagar that he would bless Ishmael and make nations of him, but he wasn't considered the child of promise. Isaac was, who was the second born, and there were others born after him. Then Isaac had the twins, Esau and Jacob, but it was the second born, Jacob, that prevailed, right? And then among Jacob's children, Reuben was disqualified, because he slept with his father's concubine, and then Simeon and Levi were disqualified. So it was one of the younger ones, Joseph, that prevailed. And later on, you see, when you have the kings of Israel, the first one, Saul, was rejected by God because of his disobedience to him, and it's the second one, David, that prevailed. And David was not the oldest son of his father, Jesse. He was the youngest one. And among David's children, Solomon was not the oldest of David's sons. He was one of the younger ones, but the one that was chosen to be king after David. So the way God does things, it's not according to human tradition or custom. Those things are not important to God. What's more important to God is his choice of individuals and whether those individuals will believe him. Okay, it's important that they believe that God exists and that they know that God is a rewarder of those that diligently seek him and that they do seek him. So it's generally the humbler one that God chooses and the one that will take God's word to heart and believe it and do his best to walk for God. And when it comes to Jesus Christ, think of this and look at 1 Corinthians 15, and we'll close there tonight. 1 Corinthians 15, towards the end of the chapter, we'll start in verse 45, talking about the resurrection from the dead and that there's a natural body and there's a spiritual body. Verse 45 says, "And so it is written, the first man, Adam, was made a living soul. The last Adam was made a quickening spirit." Who's that last Adam? That's Jesus Christ, okay? Adam was the first one that was considered a son of God. Adam had no human father, right? He was created by God. He was formed by God, made by God. So he came directly from God. Jesus Christ had no human father. God was his actual father. So he has that in common with Adam. Adam was the first. Jesus Christ was the second one, right? Adam was given the dominion in the beginning, but he disobeyed God. Jesus Christ the second was the one that obeyed God, and he's the one that has prevailed. Verse 45 again, "So it is written, the first man, Adam, was made a living soul. The last Adam was made a quickening spirit. Howbeit, that was not first, which is spiritual, but that which is natural, and afterward, that which is spiritual. The first man is of the earth, earthy." Okay, Adam means red because of the red soil that his body was formed out of. "The first man is of the earth, earthy. The second man is the Lord from heaven. And as is the earthy, such are they also that are earthy. And as is the heavenly, such are they also that are heavenly. And as we have borne the image of the earthy," our physical bodies, we inherited from Adam, right? "That we shall also bear the image of the heavenly." We'll have spiritual bodies that we get because we believed in Jesus Christ. Okay? So next week, we're going to look at Moses' parents and then Moses himself, which are the next ones that are mentioned in Hebrews chapter 11. So that's all for tonight, and we'll pick it up there next week.